Good morning. Provincial Treasury, Mr. Nair Gautam, Mr. Adil Adin, Provincial Treasury and your team, welcome. I have the presence of the Chief Work, welcome. And Mr. Staff at the back there from Provincial Treasury PMG. Please
at
the back and from what department?
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Vernon Titus, Corporate Services Centre, Department of the Premier.
Premier, alright, thank you. Thank you.
Warren Wilson, Department of the Premier.
My name is Simon Rizzo, PMG.
Thank you. Provincial Treasury, the other members, officials of family and welcome. Members, our agenda for this morning. Let me first deal with the apologies, sorry. Apologies for Member Kavira. Any other apologies? None. Our agenda for this morning. Receive a briefing from Provincial, from National Treasury on the 17-18 annual reports, as well as a briefing by Provincial Treasury on the 17-18 annual reports and the process pertaining to the department and the entity. On your agenda, you will see point four, that the AG is also on the agenda, but I just, and I see the AG here, but I just need to inform the members that the information I have received is that all annual reports it's not been submitted officially, and therefore point four, the AG will not give a briefing to us this morning. I think the issue is that this budget committee itself, at the day that we've set here, is actually putting the cart before the horse, because the closing date is today, but the closing time is 4 o'clock. So I think we must learn from this exercise that we give the department the day and the correct time to submit the annual reports. So it's a technical thing that we must deal with. So we will have to, after today's budget meeting, I will have to arrange another budget meeting, especially for the AGP. To brief us before the annual report process starts on the 9th. Member Kadir?
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to remind you that last year we had the same problem. And I think it is inexcusable. If we do our planning, we must do our planning right. Last year the same happened. So you can't say we must learn from our experience now. It's a past experience that we were supposed to learn from it.
Noted, the point is noted, Member. Can we then move on to on the agenda? I'm handing over to National Treasury to brief us on the 17-18 report, Mr. Nair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues from the National, the Provincial Treasury and the Auditor General and the Department of the Premier. Many thanks for once again giving me the opportunity to address the Budget Committee on the proposed process to oversee annual reports of departments and entities in your province. This is the overview of my presentation. I'll give you a brief synopsis of the legal frameworks and the importance of oversight, the PFMA financial management model, the roles of the select committee, the public accounts committee, and other role plays, the proposed oversight process, interrogating and evaluating annual reports, and oversight of technical quality of annual reports, as well as the oversight of performance.
This part deals with the legal framework and the importance of oversight. Well, this slide just essentially deals with the respective clauses from the Constitution relating to the importance of oversight and what is the role of the legislature when it comes to oversight. So basically, provincial legislatures need to provide mechanisms to ensure that provincial organs of state are accountable to it, and to maintain oversight of the provincial executive authority, including the implementation of legislation, as well as any organ of state. Section 133.3b of the Constitution also requires members of the Executive Council in the province to provide the legislature with regular and full reports concerning matters under their control. Now, these reports would include the annual reports that need to be tabled in the legislature. The legislative framework in terms of the PFMA, well, in terms of Chapter 13 of the Constitution, in particular Section 216 of the Constitution, requires that legislation must establish a national treasury, and the national treasury must prescribe, amongst others, uniform treasury norms and standards. Now, the reference to uniform treasury norms and standards of the Constitution would include the Public Finance Management Act as well as the Municipal Finance Management Act. But today I'm just going to focus on the Public Finance Management Act. The PFMA basically focuses on performance, outputs and responsibilities of accounting officers and accounting authorities. It provides for flexibility with accountability and transparency. It focuses on the spending of money in terms of the three E's, which is the efficiency, effectiveness and economy. And it provides clarity of roles between the accounting officers and accounting authorities, as well as those of the executive authorities. Now, the ethos of the PFMA is based on letting managers manage and holding them accountable. Now, the PFMA, these are the sections of the PFMA that deals with annual reports. Accounting officers and accounting authorities need to provide the executive authority with an annual report within 5 months after the end of the financial year. The executive authority thereafter have another month to table that in the relevant legislature. So, as the chairperson indicated, today is the last day for the tabling of annual reports, so since it's the last working day, but normally by the 30th of September, that is 6 months after the end of the financial year, all annual reports need to be tabled in the relevant legislature. If an executive authority is unable to table his or her department's or entity's annual report within that time frame, a written submission needs to be made to the legislature setting out the reasons why the annual report wasn't tabled, and also providing an indication as to when the annual report would be tabled. Now, what is the importance of legislative oversight? Now, institutions are established, they have a particular mandate, and this mandate is normally in all cases established in terms of legislation. If I could use the water boards, for example. The water boards are established in terms of the Water Services Act, this is a framework legislation. Or you might find, again, Department of Correctional Services is established in terms of the Correctional Services Act. Now, also, in terms of the legislative oversight, what is the importance of oversight? Government has sets priorities on an annual basis, and these priorities have been translated into strategic plans, the annual performance plans, and the budgets. And then the closing the accountability loop would be the annual report. And the annual report is essentially a report card of a department or public entity. Now, the annual report needs to also include the service delivery targets, which must be aligned to the mandate of the institution, and the as well as specific targets which must be measurable and need to relate to the program. And it must also ensure that spending takes place in accordance with the priorities as in terms of government priorities. Then the Auditor General will audit this information, and over the years, the Auditor General has indicated that there has been a significant improvement in the quality of performance information. Now, with regard to legislative oversight again, the information that comes out of the legislative oversight process will also give independent institutions such as civil society organizations important information regarding the performance of a department, a public entity, for that particular financial year. Now, closing the accountability loop, as I indicated, the annual report is a report card of a department or public entity. Now, annually, budgets are approved or appropriated in the legislature, and it's also approved in accordance with set priorities of government. And these priorities are translated in the strategic plans and annual performance plans, which contain specific performance measures which are linked to the priorities. The annual report gives an indication of how the executive authority and accounting officer have used those appropriated funds to implement their strategic plan. Now, the National Treasury has developed a guideline on legislative oversight of annual reports in 2005 to assist legislators to develop processes for overseeing the annual reports. Now, we have not updated this particular guideline as yet because the information contained therein is still relevant. But the National Treasury is busy with an exercise to develop another guideline for public accounts committees as to what they should look at and to focus in the financial statements, and you know, especially looking at the notes to the financial statements, and what are the key issues that they should really focus on, particularly around issues of unauthorized expenditure, illegal expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as issues related to payments within 30 days, which is also quite a burning issue. Then there's a presentation on suggestions on the oversight process that needs to be to consider. Now this is the PFMA financial management model. If I could start at the bottom on the budget and output. Now the budgets contain particular outputs or funding that that departments are going to use to implement the service delivery improvement program, or basically the outputs that are contained in the service delivery improvement program. And the strategic plans contain specific outcomes and outputs. Now the legislature, the strategic plans and annual performance plans are tabled in the legislature, and the legislature appropriates funds on an annual basis based on the policies and priorities of a department, and after the relevant trainees have gone through a budget process. Now, in the budget, the executive authorities are responsible for specific outcomes. Now, if we could use the Department of Education, for example, the MEC for Education, one of his priorities, one of his outcomes, or her outcomes would be to improve literacy in the province. Now, in order for that to improve literacy, the accounting officer would need to deliver certain outputs in order to achieve that outcome. And the outputs would include the building of schools, the employment of appropriately qualified teachers, purchasing of textbooks and so forth. That would be some of the outputs. Then the accounting officer would, in order to achieve those outputs, you enter into performance agreements with the senior managers, who would in turn enter into performance agreements with their staff. Now, performance agreement is a Public Service Act, a Public Service Regulation requirement. So even at clerical level, they need to have performance agreements as well. So that those performance agreements contain the performance requirements, if you look at the right-hand side of the model. Then there's section 44 of the PFMA provides for delegations of authority. Now, as we know that the accounting officer is not able to perform all these tasks on his or her own, so we'll be able to delegate certain functions to personnel within his or her department or public entity. Then during the course of the financial year, there's in-year management reporting. The Public Finance Management Act requires, in terms of Section 40, Subsection 4 of the PFMA, for monthly reports to be submitted to the relevant treasuries on the on spending in terms of their budget. And then they also need to report on issues related to unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, frivolous and wasteful expenditure. Then the Treasury regulations also make provision for accounting officers to, on a quarterly basis, inform the relevant executive authority on performance against the strategic plan and annual performance plan. Then towards the end of the financial year, the departments and entities are required to prepare the financial statements within 2 months after the end of the financial year for submission to the Auditor General for auditing. And then also an annual report is also prepared, and as I indicated earlier, it needs to be tabled in the legislature by 30th of September of each year, or basically on the last working day of September. Then the review and assessment, this basically refers to the audits that are performed by the Auditor General, as well as the oversight that takes place by the relevant committees of the legislature. Then at the bottom you see internal audit and risk management. Now this is a continuous process that takes place in a department. The internal audit, as well as the accounting officer, needs to continuously monitor the risks associated with his institution. The next part of my presentation deals with the roles of the select committees and public accounts committees, as well as the role by other, the inputs by other role players. The roles of the select committees, as I indicated earlier, the annual reports close the accountability loop, and in the relevant committees would exercise oversight of service delivery in those particular departments. Now, what would be the focus of the select committees? They should focus on the technical quality of the annual report in terms of the format. Is the annual report developed in accordance with the prescribed format? Is the information simple and easy to understand? Or is it not a copy and paste from previous annual reports? Those type of things. Can you look at the quality of performance information? Is the performance information clearly indicated in terms of quantity, quality, and timeliness? Is the performance information developed in terms of the SMART principles? Is it specific, measurable, accurate, reliable, and timely? And then also, you should also look at the effectiveness, efficiency, and economy of service delivery, implementation of the entity service delivery improvement program, a plan, as well as evaluating management's explanation of why service delivery is not in line with the target. Now, in a specific plan, the department would have specific targets. For instance, a Department of Human Settlements would provide for the development of the building of, say, 500 houses. But if 450 houses have been built, then the accounting officer needs to provide an explanation as to why the target was not met. What are the reasons for not meeting the 500 that as a, for which funds were appropriated and why wasn't it built? Then the roles of the Public Accounts Committee. The Public Accounts Committee basically serves as the protector of the public purse, and they should focus on a few critical issues. With regard to financial probity, we should look at the fraud that has taken place in the department, and in corporate governance, to look at the audit committee's report on the institution. At the time of evaluating the annual report, if the general report of the Auditor General is available, then look at the general report as well as the audit report of the department. Look at issues related to compliance to PFMA. The Auditor General annually reports on non-compliance with laws and regulations. Now these non-compliance are mainly around the areas of supply chain management, and that's why we have irregular expenditure budgeting year on year. And it's really reaching proportions that is really of real concern. Other issues that we need to look at is unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, as well as fruitless or wasteful expenditure. So look at the fruitless or wasteful expenditure and interrogate the financial statements and ask certain questions to the accounting officer. What are the processes to recover this fruitless or wasteful expenditure? As well as irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure, we are asking the hard questions. What consequences will the relevant people that have been responsible for this face? Have the accounting officer taken disciplinary action? They also need to look at the internal control and risk management systems. With regard to internal controls, the audit committee normally, and it is required of them to provide a statement of the internal controls of the department. So it's one of the things that the public accounts committee should focus on. And then, as I indicated earlier about supply chain management, supply chain management and irregular expenditure is very, very closely linked. And it's also mainly related to the non-compliance and supply chain management key skills. Then we look at the debt write-offs. Accounting officers are required to disclose the amounts that they have written off in their financial statements. Now, accounting officer, as I've indicated earlier, PFMA is about allowing members to manage, but holding them accountable. Now, the legislation makes provision for the accounting officer to approve debt write-offs, unlike the pre-PFMA era, which was the Treasury to approve debt write-offs. So now you're going to ask the question, what procedures or what did the accounting officer considered when writing off the debt? Efforts made to recover the debt, or was it just written off? Look at the amounts that were written off. Yes, stuff like that. Then also look at major financial losses that have been suffered by the relevant institution. And then payments within 30 days. Now this is really becoming problematic. And we have the new growth path, we have the national development plan, all these documents that promote economic growth and the creation of jobs and so forth. But then, when we have public sector institutions not paying their suppliers timely, this is resulting in small businesses closing down. They've been required to retrench employees in order to remain afloat, as well as in some cases, borrowing money from financial institutions in order to keep their cash flows so that they can operate. Now this is really creating problems for these small businesses. So the hard questions with regard to accruals needs to be asked. The next slide deals with the links between the committees. Now committees should ideally not operate in isolation of each other, and that they should really share information to improve the overall effectiveness of oversight. The committee should even consider holding joint hearings for certain departments, or even all departments if possible. The select committees and the public accounts committees ideally should be able to share information. If that is not possible, then the public accounts committees or the portfolio committees should share information, critical information with each other in what they have found during the oversight process. The next slide deals with inputs by other role players in the evaluation process. Now the role players that I've indicated here is the Auditor General, National Treasury, constitutional institutions, committee researchers, as well as stakeholders and the public. Now, what inputs are provided by the role players? Well, the Auditor General will provide information on the auditing of the financial statements. Yeah, they would indicate, there would be an audit report would indicate what are the key findings. They would also give you an indication of the audit opinion of that particular institution. Then they'll also provide information on the performance information, and in some cases perform performance audit of selected entities. And then they may produce any other specific report that may be relevant at the time. Then the National Treasury annually prepares a guide on the technical requirements for annual reports. And the future phases may also issue further directives as what the commission departments need to provide. Then the National Treasury has developed a guide for the management of program performance information, as well as the framework for strategic planning and annual performance planning. Then the National Treasury also provides a consolidated report on the tabling of annual reports and financial statements in the legislature, as well as on audit outcomes of all national and provincial institutions. This memorandum is normally tabled in Cabinet towards the end of November of each year. Then with regard to constitutional institutions, they may provide input into the oversight hearing dealing with specific issues within their mandate. For example, if the public protector has conducted an investigation into a department, and they may provide information at the portfolio committee, also basically the select committees and the public accounts committees on their findings as well. Then committee researchers need to be familiar with the challenges, policies and other developments that are taking place in the department, and you know, especially with regard to press reports as well as reports by the public protector or any of the other constitutional institutions, or any investigation that has taken place, maybe an investigation by the special investigation unit or so forth. Those are things that they need to provide the information to the committee. They should be able to review the strategic plans, the annual performance plans, the in-year reports and previous annual reports as well. So the annual reports of one financial year should not be read in isolation, should be related to, you should be looking at previous annual reports as well. They should focus on major development in the area of focus on an ongoing basis, especially around areas of the education sector, the health sector. You know, what are the problems that are taking place? What are the initiatives that government is taking with regard to these issues, about those particular issues? Researchers should also be able to speak to the relevant treasuries. As I indicated earlier, the treasuries receive these monthly reports from the from departments on spending against their budget. And it could also speak to the auditors and other stakeholders, as I indicated, the special investigating unit, the public protector. And stakeholders in the public also have a role as well. And the civil society organizations in the education sector, they could speak to the school governing bodies. You know, there's I think they have a forum, to speak to the forum of school governing bodies and so forth. Which will also give you an indication of the problems or progress that they have identified in institutions. The next part of my presentation deals with the proposed oversight process. Now, as the chairperson and I indicated earlier, that today is the last day for the tabling of annual reports, but the process to start the evaluation of annual report should start, you know, well in advance of that, in order to prepare for the evaluation. So committee staff should be able to have access to all relevant documents. This will include the relevant legislation that establishes those departments, the previous annual reports, the strategic plans, the annual performance plans, and any other relevant documents. As I said, it could also include reports of public protector or special investigation unit as well. And you should identify and contact subject matter experts for the hearing. In some cases, information will be highly technical, especially in the areas of the public works environment, especially you know, with the engineering issues and so forth, and even at national level, you know, in the mining sector, you could contact subject matter experts to assist the committee in the hearing. And then in preparation for the oversight phase, members should read all relevant documents. To include the strategic plan, the annual performance plan, the legislation establishing the department, as well as previous annual reports. You should compare the current year's performance with previous year's performance and you know, previous oversight reports. You should consult with the subject matter experts and other relevant stakeholders who I've indicated earlier. And you should prioritize issues and questions for the oversight process. And the committee should essentially meet in advance of the actual oversight process and identify the key issues that we are going to focus on during the oversight. And we should prioritize key questions, you know, after the evaluation of the relevant documents, they should prioritize key questions that they are going to ask them and determine upfront what do they want to achieve with the oversight hearing. So that, you know, oversight takes place in a structured manner. Then the oversight hearing phases, you know, as the earlier indicated that the reports need to be tabled by the 30th of September. So it gives you a 2-week period as well to consolidate issues. And the hearing should essentially take place between the 15th and 31st of October. Now these are just proposed, this is a mere proposal. This is not legislated in any way, but this is the, it's proposed that between the 15th and 31st of October, the hearing should take place. And then the relevant member of the Executive Council should be able to give the committee an overview of the performance of the department. Now, they've got four options for the oversight hearing. It could either be, one of the options could be the MEC and/or the accounting office should provide a presentation on the annual report, and then a committee should go with a page-by-page review of the annual report. But that's it's quite a laborious process, and that doesn't take quite a lot of time. Another option would be for the presentation by the minister, by the MEC or the accounting officer, followed by a presentation by one of the members of the committee, and dealing with key issues that have been identified by the committee, and then followed by a question and answer session. Another option would be also a presentation by the accounting officer, MEC, followed by inputs by invited experts, and then followed by a question and answer session. Then also another one would be same presentation by the MEC or accounting officer followed by a full-scale public hearing and a question and answer session. During then after the hearing, there should be a report that should be tabled in the legislature. Each select committee should prepare a report on the entities that they have overseen. And the oversight report should deal with compliance with the tabling deadline. You know, has the report been tabled in the legislature by the required date? Look at the compliance with the technical requirements of the annual report. Does it comply with the requirements that have been prescribed by the relevant treasury? The usefulness of the general information, comments on the entity's reported performance, comments on the human resource situation and policies, especially around vacancies in the institution, issues around the entity's performance, and recommendations in relation to any of the issues that have been that I've indicated above. And then the oversight report should be tabled in the House by not later than 14th of November, or at least before the December recess of the legislature. And in certain cases, the legislature may even consider debating these reports. And then once accepted, the report should be sent back to the MECs for reports or for a response on the resolution that have been taken by the committee. Now, in the follow-up phase, this is a very, very important phase because it often happens even at national legislature as well as in provincial legislature, there's no real follow-up mechanism to track resolutions that the committees have taken. And this is particularly important to hold the MECs to account. So there must be a process where the resolutions that have been taken by the committee are followed up and to ensure that these resolutions get a result. Now this is just I'm not going to go into detail, this is essentially all that I've discussed on the overview process, just a diagrammatic representation of that. Then interrogating and evaluating annual reports, here must be a clear understanding of the purpose of oversight and what the process wants to achieve. And then the oversight committee should also required to fulfill a constitutional mandate in terms of Section 133, Subsection 3B, to hold the executive account. But also, the oversight is aimed at ensuring that department public entities are providing services that are of high quality, and also in terms of efficiency, effectiveness, and economy. So they're also complying with the legislative mandate that are contained in the legislation that establishes them, as well as in the strategic plans and the annual performance plans, as well as in the budget. And also to look at whether the institution is contributing towards the realization of government's objectives. Also, the aim would be to gather information and views of customers and clients, as I've indicated earlier. You know, one of the clients could be the school governing bodies or other civil society organizations, and make recommendations on improving the quality and responsiveness of the services. Now, in preparing to exercise the oversight phase, I mean, this is a little of a checklist that that could assist. You know, think about issues and information needs well in advance of the oversight process. Set clear targets and milestones that need to be achieved. Know about other oversight processes that have been taking place and which are relevant. Tailor the oversight process to where it can have the most impact by setting clear priorities. Be flexible to be able to take on board new issues that are come about in that environment, as well as options that may arise in the course of the oversight process, and also to be able to be open to consult with outside experts, organizations, and clients. The oversight process should be forward-looking, and remember that the purpose of oversight is to improve service delivery in future. And I think it is of particular importance to note that the committee needs to work as a team in exercising oversight. And the process is about the legislature exercising oversight in terms of the constitution. It is not about opposition parties exercising oversight over government. Then the technical quality of the annual reports, ensure that annual reports comply with the legal framework, the structure, compilation of information, tabling of annual reports. I think I've covered this in a bit of detail earlier on. And then the typical type of question that needs to be asked. Was it the report delivered on time? Is it in terms of the prescribed format? Does the layout facilitate easy understanding? Is it simple to understand? Is the information communicated simply and clearly? Is the annual report original, or is it just a copy and paste from previous annual reports? Does the report deal faithfully with the aspects contained in the strategic plan? I mean, the annual report should be a mirror of the strategic plan. All information that's contained in the strategic plan must be included in the annual report, with basically information on service delivery and whether it's deviation or non-achievement of targets, there needs to be explanation. And then it also needs to look at whether the information contained in the annual reports are performance measures are robust, whether the information can be verified, and was an accessible amount. And which, now that we are really fiscally constrained and we are in cost containment mode, we should also look at the quality of annual reports, looking at the quality of the production of annual reports now. We should question the amount that is spent on these annual reports. Then the next slide is the necessary background information. We should look at the guide for the preparation of annual reports. The committee should be familiar with technical terms and methods that are used to describe the service delivery performance, service delivery information, especially on the three E's, and describe the human resource issues. Look at the strategic plans and budgets of the institution. The next part deals with the oversight of performance. And here it's the look at in the annual report, the committee should look at the background information, the organizational concerns. This could also take into consideration matters that are in the public domain. evaluating past performance as well as future performance, and evaluating the efficiency of performance, evaluating the human resource development. And then the background information, also could look at the mandate, the structure, way of operating, the strengths and weaknesses, the strategic plan and budget, information on external and internal challenges faced by the entity, as well as information from clients. Organizational concerns, does the entity contribute towards the achievement of government objectives as reflected in its mandate? There is a mandate, does the mandate clearly reflect on government's priorities and the needs of clients? Is the entity still relevant, or should it be included, or should additional programs be concluded, or some program be terminated? Is the entity still relevant, or should it be closed, and whether the some of the performance should be included in that of a department if it is a public entity? Then looking at past performance, is the annual report transparent about the entity's performance, or is it simply a public relations exercise? Have the aims, objectives, and performance targets and quality standards been met? Have the entity's performance targets changed over time? If there's an increase in funding, besides the normal inflation-adjusted increase, if there's a substantial increase in certain programs, has that resulted in an increase in performance in terms of targets? Is there examples of good practices that have been identified and how the institution has delivered its services? And is that, those type of examples are identified, can those examples be shared with other institutions, or be replicated in other institutions to improve their performance? What changes have been made in the services provided to clients? So is it just the same type of service? We're moving towards the fourth industrial revolution now, and we need to look at innovation. The department been looking at other better ways to improve their services? And what are the clients' views on the nature and quality of services that are rendered by the institution? With regard to evaluating future performance, are the objectives and performance linked to governance overall aims? Are the objectives and targets sufficiently comprehensive? Do the targets drive continuous improvement? Is there continuity in the performance targets between years? And does the entity have too many performance targets? And also, I think those of the performance targets are also relevant. Attending meetings and developing circulars and so forth, they're not really regarded as performance targets. And are there any additional performance measures, targets that the committee thinks may be needed? And do the performance targets measure delivery and outputs of and the achievement of outcomes? And is there a right balance between output and performance? And is there effective and efficient information systems in place to measure performance in an institution? With regard to evaluating the efficiency of performance, type of questions that need to be asked: are there systems to identify clients' needs and to monitor whether those needs are being met? Has the entity delivered value for money, and over time is it delivering its outputs at a reduced cost? And as it indicated, we need to be innovative in managing costs and improving performance. What steps have been taken in this regard? What are the issues that are hampering the service delivery? Is it being hampered by internal bureaucracy? And how effective are the relations between entities operating in the same area? And has service delivery risks been managed adequately, and especially risks in the health environment? And does the entity comply with the Promotion of Access to Information Act? On human resource development, has the progress been made in implementation of service delivery improvement program that is required by the Department of Public Service and Administration? And what has been done to fill key vacancies? And now that many departments are not filling vacancies due to cost containment, but then there are certain key vacancies that need to be filled. And what progress has been made in that regard? Because in many instances when there's when there's many, many vacancies, you could see that in the in the performance of an institution. And also employment equity, is there a balance between gender and other equity measures? And what is the status of the skills development program in the department? Is it making a difference to staff's ability to deliver services? Human resource development, this is an issue about performance of bonuses. Is there a correlation between the payment of bonuses and performance of a department? What about the outstanding disciplinary measures? I mean, we should ask questions as to the number of personnel that are on suspension. For how long are they on suspension? Why are disciplinary hearings taking so long to be finalized? Because these people are being paid. We all know in information in the public domain, in some instances, one of the problems that one of the school principals was on suspension for 9 years. Just totally unacceptable. And then how many senior management posts do consultants for? That's a key issue. You cannot outsource our physical functions to consultants. So, are we clear about the direction of the institution? An annual report will give you a clear indication as to which direction the institution is going. Is it going this way, that way, or somewhere else? So thank you, colleagues. This is essentially my presentation on the proposed method to evaluate annual reports of departments and public entities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I found the presentation very helpful in building our capacity as members to understand and place our members on our responsibility in our task, particularly in oversight. Members, are there any questions in the here one call? And clear and member 8. In the code law? Fine. In the here one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation, sir. I have comments to make and I have questions to ask, and I also have concerns to raise. Okay, let me repeat. I said I have questions, I have concerns to raise, but I also have comments to make. In a sense, sir, you are speaking here to the converted in what you said here. Because as an opposition, we play our role exactly as you have spelled it out here. We are very strong on that. More so, even in Scopa. Most of the things that you've mentioned here are the things that we do in Scopa. However, I have a question for you regarding your opinion on what do you understand, what is a hearing? What should happen at a hearing? Then on page, I'll just put them on slide number 20. At the bottom of slide number 20, you say, presentation followed by the MEC and the accounting officer, followed by inputs, that part. Then the very last one says, when we're talking now about oversight hearings, that you're obviously referring to the annual report oversight hearings, right? Your last sentence says, presentation by the MEC and or the accounting officer, followed by a full-scale public hearing, followed by a question and answer session. What can we do? Because if you sit in on our annual report sessions, you will hear us repeatedly speaking about the fact that the public doesn't know. The public is not invited, and even if the public is here, sometimes they're not even allowed to speak. So what do you, and that's why I'm asking you the question, what do you understand from a hearing? Because I've been told a hearing is not a public participation process.
Once accepted on slide 22, you say, once accepted, report should be sent to the relevant MEC for response to resolutions. Now, what maybe you should say or explain to us, when exactly do you want that? Because when we do our resolutions, it's a next meeting when these responses come, either to the Standing Committee or to SCOPA, because we slide them in to SCOPA as we see the need for them. Then on slide 26, the aim of select committees, and I know that you're talking to standing committees here. Your second point says, or maybe I should start with the first one. The aim of an oversight committee says it should have a clear understanding of its purpose of oversight to help to achieve the objectives. And your next one says, to fulfill constitutional obligation to hold the executive accountable. Now, that means, sir, all of us who are not executive members should be holding the executive to account. That does not happen here. We are praising it, and one of my comments that I want to make, if you look in at the audience who's listening to you now, you will see all the ruling party chairpersons who are leading these standing committees. How many of them are sitting here? Probably six. That's how important they consider this. And so when we have our standing committees, or when we are curtailed in the questions that we need to ask to fulfill our constitutional responsibility that we have over oversight. Slide 27. Why did I mention 27? Oh. The committee needs to work as a team in exercising oversight. That happens in SCOPA, I can assure you. Remember that the purpose of oversight is to improve service delivery in the future, not to be defensive about things when they are pointed out that we do not agree with, because we all serve the same community. We all serve the same problems. And then on slide 36, evaluating past performances. You asked, in considering when we talk about entities, we should consider whether certain entities are still serving their purpose, whether some should be closed, or whether best practices are shared. I can assure you those are debates that we have all the time about certain entities that really don't know what their core function is anymore. They're doing all sorts of things to keep themselves alive. In certain instances, we do share best practices. If we discover them, we'll ask other committees to sit in with us or to share their best practice. Generally, a last comment that you made, you said, whoever receives a bonus, is it worth what they are paid depending on the performance of that department? Now, just a scenario, sir. Let's say we don't agree that this person should be paid that bonus, and we recommend that bonus should be taken away, refused, or whatever. That's an amendment to a budget. We can't do that. We cannot do anything about a budget that gets put in front of us, even though we have oversight over what we're looking at in the annual report, whether it's a budget period or whether it's an annual report period. We can do nothing about it, because we cannot amend money bills. So at the end of the year, once everything is done, we look at the annual report where all the financials have been done already. Because even at the beginning, when we have the budget in front of us, we are still doing oversight, because we do it in standing committees. But what can we do about it? Nothing. So while your advice is taken, and as I said at the outset, as the opposition, we play our role in every aspect, as you said it here. We really try. But we have a wall of defensiveness that we try to get past most times. Most times. There are few chairpersons who would really play their oversight role in the way that they should. So, I asked a question about public hearings. What can we do to make this government understand that public hearings means the public must be there, they must take part, they must be allowed to question, they must be allowed to have their say, because we are governing them. I think I'll leave it for that. Come back later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, through you, ek gaan nie 'n lap om 'n gesonde vinger hier kry nie, en ek gaan ook nie. Ek is direk met my vrou vanmorgen. Mr. Nell, sorry for the Afrikaans, but I'm very serious. The Constitution gives you as National Treasury, as well as Provincial Treasury, to be the custodian of what is happening within the fiscal public purse. The PFMA is clear with the instruction to your department. Now my question this morning, what you have given us is what we are doing as opposition, but I'm sitting with a concern in the Western Cape. You are clear, PFMA are clear, annual reports need to be tabled. We are doing our part as opposition here. What are you doing? Okay, you, as National Treasury, as well as Provincial Treasury, give us a way forward. When an MEC did not table his annual report last year, and it's coming again this year. As National Treasury, what measurements did you put in place? Because we can do all our oversight, but if you don't answer through an annual report, it means you can't account to the public what happened to their fund. The MEC in this legislature, the last answer we received is that he's going to take the AG to court. Now I need to know from National Treasury, because you're the highest organ and this oversight, protecting our constitution, protecting the public purse. What are you doing about this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thanks for the presentation. It's good to hear you every year, and there's always a new angle that you can listen to and understand. I also would like to refer to the legal framework that you spelled out and the constitutional obligation that's been put on the department and specifically the executive authority, the MEC, and also the HOD, the accounting officer, as spelled out in the constitution and of course in terms of other legislation, specifically the PFMA. Now you did refer a couple of times to the different pieces of legislation, also section 65, and again it's the submission. I would also like to ask National Treasury, I don't think we're making enough of submitting annual reports, because that is the report in terms of what you've emphasized today. Although you say there must be regular reports reading your guideline, there's one report that you emphasize, and that's the annual report. And you started off with almost like identifying and making a big issue of it, calling it day delivery, because today is day delivery. And if you don't deliver, you don't deliver. I mean, it's a very big issue. Of course, here it's been played down completely, and we haven't received all the reports yet, but you can say there's a couple of hours still to go, you know. So we're still not at day, we're at day delivery, but we don't see anything happening around that. I want to link up with Member Gideon, where she raised the issue, and also asked what is National Treasury doing. We see you here once a year. You make a presentation and not referring to yourself, and then it's, that's it. And I would like to understand what is the support that National Treasury gives, of course, in terms of the legislation. And the question was very clear that was asked by Member Gillian, and we're still faced with that problem, is that last year we did, and that 16-17, we received no report from NEC Windy on agriculture, no report. So we're still here today. The expectation is that we're not going to receive any report today. Now, I know you referred to the mechanism about the 30 days and every Friday or every week you must emphasize, and it must be on the order paper if it's late, and the speaker must report when they received it and why it was not received in the letter writing. But I mean, that's for a week or two over the 30th of September. But we now are stuck with the issue of over a year. And how do you keep somebody accountable if that happens? Because a non-tabling to me is very clear, no opinion. And a no opinion is a disclaimer. Now, my question is, I want to take it further. What do you say? You must have some experience somewhere in the country as well. I mean, sure, it's not only happening in the Western Cape. What is the next step to do? And this is very serious, because we could not consider our annual reports as this legislator, because the reports were not all in. But what we do find is a consolidated financial statements without one leg not being accommodated. So I think it's very important that you do need to spell out that. And I would also like to hear, because when you refer to the role players or the stakeholders, you didn't refer to the role of provincial treasury. You referred to National Treasury and the Auditor General and Select Committee, what we see here as our standing committees, but not as provincial treasury, as playing that almost independent role, almost that role that must also strengthen and support the whole constitution and the whole principle of oversight. So if you can also please reflect on that. Thank you.
Member, I call a list of names now, so I'm going to allow National Treasury to respond, and then we can do a second round. So let me know, I've got your name on, Member Conza, and Member Kada, I've got your name on, Member Sharon. All the names, let me just break it up into phases. But before Mr. Nair responds, I need to respond on some of the comments Member Bjorn made, which is directly affected to our work that we do as members here. First of all, there's 10 chairpersons here, Member Bjorn. And if it shows the 10 chairpersons here, shows the urgency and their urgency of being here. It's important that I raise that, because it's misleading to say only six chairs. The other important point is that all our work in Parliament is open to the public. Whether in a committee or whether just this committee, our work is open to the public. In fact, the public hearings get advertised, and this Parliament spent thousands of rand on ads. But we spent thousands of rand. Whether the people come or not, whether it may be in the best papers or not, in the local papers, we even pursue that to make sure that the ordinary person on the local newspapers also knows about it. So I think we've gone besides the big papers that we used to do it in the past, in previous terms. So in this term we've made these changes to make sure many people also know. So it's important that this administration follow that rule on every single public hearing prior to the public hearing, where the towns, where the date is, what date, and even in the year. So if the budget committee, even this budget committee, has a public hearing as part of the process, it will advertise, and at the end of the meeting, after the briefing by the departments, we will then ask if there's anyone from the public, and we will give them the opportunity.
Just a point of order. We ask questions to National Treasury.
That point you raise is not
national.
I'm not national
treasury.
I'm responding to the comments.
Give him an opportunity to respond, then maybe you can come in afterwards.
No,
Chairperson. No, man. You're not national treasury.
You're trying to block us now, listening to National Treasury. No, Chair.
Member, it is my responsibility as the chairman of this budget committee to reflect on what Member Beerwinkel has said. It is.
Point of order, chairperson.
I don't expect National Treasury to
comment. You are not the chairperson
in this house.
No, you are not the chairperson.
I made my point. The last point I want to say, all members, whether we're in opposition or whether we're in the ruling party or what, where we are, all members participate equally in all proceedings, and we keep the executive to account. That's all. I'm handing over to we allow the National Treasury to respond to the questions. Thank you. Over to you, Mr.
Chairperson, can I have a point of order? Chairperson, as members of this legislature, we need to be treated equally, even by you as the chairperson. And if we make comments as members towards each other here, we need also to make comments that is a true reflection. Because the member next to me is making a comment the whole time, you don't call it to order. Chapter number 2, here we go again. Chairperson, we are not here in a sitting. No, it's not a joke. We're not in a sitting here. We're in a very important meeting of this legislature where all of us needs to be accountable. All of us needs to be very honest here. I'm not going to be treated as a second-class citizen in your meeting, Chairperson. I'm not going to allow that. Because here we are in front of National Treasury, we're in front of Provincial Treasury, and the AG. I think the most important part of our oversight is playing off here today. I'm not going to allow, Chairperson, that this meeting continue in the manner of what happened yesterday in the sitting, and I'm calling on you as a chair to guide this meeting in that direction. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, could you allow me the same opportunity now, please? Chairperson, you see exactly the behavior. Point of order, everybody else has allowed time to speak. Chairperson, you allow me now the same opportunity you allow the other members.
I want to respond to members. I will allow to speak. Thank you. Member Gilliam, I have a responsibility as chairperson, and what comes to the floor is, this is a public meeting, this is not closed session, so it's important that we give and share the correct information and treat everyone the same. I've never treated anyone different up to now. So you're allowed to speak, and I have to do my responsibility as chair to correct any information that is not correct, in light of what Member Beerwinkel said. But I hear what you say. We do not want to continue on the same path as yesterday. I don't think that is the way to go. I'm just going to allow Member Ricardo to speak, and then I'll hand over to you. Member Maseko, I'm just going to allow Member Ricardo to speak.
Chairperson, in the same vein,
we have to close on this topic, and then we must get on with the business of it.
Chairperson, in the same vein, that same respect need to be given to you as the chairperson. And your opinion, and people make statements here. You as the chairperson,
you have made a ruling that we must stop this now and allow the AG to respond. Member Mackenzie must sit down and allow the proceedings of the sitting.
Sorry, people. I think the first thing we must learn, even if we disagree with one another, we must respect one another. So that's the point of respect is, while the member is speaking, you must just wait your turn. I'll give you a turn if you want to speak. But I've already ruled that Mackenzie will close one of this. Member Maseko, I haven't heard any seen or anything that Member Gillian referred to. So that's why I do not want to speak. Member, please close this topic. We want
yes, Chairperson. So I want to close this topic.
Yes.
Then you as a chairperson, in any committee, a chairperson, if there's information that the chairperson would like to share with this committee, he's entitled to do so. And he's entitled to give a view of what he deems is necessary in the committee. And we should not attack chairpersons in committees.
Thank you, Member. We're ready to move forward. I'm going to ask National Treasury to respond to the questions. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Member asked, in my opinion, as to what is a hearing and what must happen. Well, basically, a hearing is, I think it's just about semantics in this case. It's about basically a meeting.
Sorry, sir. Members, can you please respect the gentleman's addressing us? Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's just, ma'am, I think it's just a matter of semantics. It's just basically a meeting that you are going to have with the department of the MEC and the accounting officer. And but you know, we thought of using the word as a hearing because the context of them appearing to discuss an annual report. So, and especially, you know, we recommended also that the public also participate. So it was in that context that I used the term of a hearing. And then one of the other questions you asked, the reports to the MEC for response, when must this be? This would be for the relevant committees to decide, you know, when this report needs to be. That is correct. It's up to the relevant committee to make that. And I mean, in the case of holding the executives to account, I mean, this does not happen here, but I mean, I think that you'll need to discuss amongst your committees to solve that matter. And oh yes, and you spoke about the bonuses. I mean, it's basically after the event. Some bonuses have been paid, and then now the accounting officer, the MEC, appears. So I think this is important information for the MEC and the accounting officers to take note of for subsequent hearings. I mean, if there's sufficient emphasis being placed on payment of bonuses, vis-à-vis the poor performance of an institution, and obviously going forward, the MEC will be quite wary of that. So I think in that context, you know, the committee should play a role. Then the other one is about the concern about the Department of Agriculture. Two members have raised that about the Department of Agriculture hasn't tabled their annual report for 16-17 and 17-18, and what is the National Treasury and the Provincial Treasury doing about that? We don't have any role when it comes to the tabling of annual reports. The annual reports are, it's a legal obligation in terms of the PFMA that annual reports need to be tabled by a specific date. And thereafter, it is the role of in this case, the provincial legislature to exercise oversight of that. So, and with regard to the agriculture, I know there's a dispute with regard to the audit opinion, and so, I mean, it's up to the relevant committee now to assess the nature of the dispute, or the reasons why the accounting officer is not tabled. I mean, does he have a valid reason for not tabling the report, saying that the opinion is in dispute? I mean, there have been previous instances where audits have been delayed in institutions, so that is the reason why annual reports were not tabled on time. So let's say, I mean, the legislature would assess that and determine, you know, okay, it's fine. So the legislation needs to play a role in that regard. The legal framework, one of the members indicated that I indicated that regular reports need to be submitted to the legislation, which includes annual reports. Now, other reports could be, during your oversight of a department, you could ask them for a plan of action in addressing audit outcomes, for instance, and then they need to provide reports on addressing audit outcomes addressing services and your targets, and you could ask them for reports in that regard. So it's not a specific report that's mentioned in any piece of legislation, but other than the annual report. But as I said, the Constitution makes provision for the legislature to ask for other reports as well. Then Question was asked is, what is National Treasury and the Provincial Treasuries doing to support institutions? I mean, National Treasury, I can speak from the National Treasury, I think we'll be able to speak. I know there's a lot of initiatives taking place from the Provincial Treasury, especially here in the Western Cape. But in the National Treasury, I mean, we develop frameworks and guidelines, and we just developed a framework on irregular expenditure, which is in the process of being issued. I've developed internal audit frameworks, risk management frameworks, and we've also assisted institutions with the implementation thereof. Then there's a regular fora that takes place. We have the Provincial Accountants General Forum that takes place on a quarterly basis, where we share information, we talk about issues of common concern. Then the National Treasury, as well as Provincial Treasury, has CFO forums that take place with the CFOs at national level, and at the Provincial Treasury, they also host provincial provincial CFO forums, they have the internal control forums, the supply chain management forum that I know that takes place here within the province. So those are the type of initiatives that take place to assist institutions with matters related to financial management, as well as it forms a forum for peer learning and a sharing of experiences and so forth. So you asked me, this is the role of, I've indicated what the role that National Treasury plays. And I just spoke from a National Treasury perspective, but as I said, you know, there are various initiatives that take place in the province as well that to assist institutions related to financial management. So I could, members, I hope I've answered all your questions. I know some were questions, some were comments.
The members have asked questions. Have you responded? Member 8?
Yeah, that's on half of the questions that I've asked. I referred to Section 65. I referred to non-tailoring, non-opinion disclaimer. I referred to day of delivery. I referred to a year later non-submission, non-tailoring of an annual report. We in the next cycle exactly the same happening. Those are critical issues that we asked you, and we would like you to respond to them. If you can't, then maybe tell us that.
Okay. Okay. My apologies. Sorry, Chair. We got to no annual report for the 16-17 and now it's like 17-18. I touched on that. I mean, there appears to be a problem with the Department of Agriculture, but I mean, it's the role of the legislature to assess the reasons. Obviously, the MEC would have tabled the reason why she's not able to table an annual report. So it's up to the committee now to assess that reason. As I've indicated, in some cases, the audit of the department is not finalized. So you need to look at the reasons why the audit is not finalized, because the MEC will give you an indication of why the audit has not been finalized. So it's up to the committee to assess the reasons to see whether it is a valid reason. So I thought I had covered that. And then the day of delivery is today as in the presentation. I mean, I think you're confident now that it doesn't really take place here in the province. But this is a proposed method of oversight. So if it doesn't take place, then I think you need to discuss it amongst your committee why it doesn't take place. And also make it incumbent on departments to or promote this day of delivery within the provincial institutions. So I thought I'd covered that, Chair.
I just see National Treasury, the Provincial Treasury want to add to some of the questions.
I'd like to just address the committee on this matter. I can provide that, and I think Jace probably doesn't have all the information. There's been a standing dispute between the Department of Agriculture and the Auditor General around the 16-17 audit report, which I think the Auditor General will acknowledge. As a Treasury, we've had discussions with the Department, and I'll brief the committee just now on a little bit of that detail. The outcome for the 2016-2017 year was only provided to the Department of Agriculture on the 31st of May 2018. So that's effectively something like four months ago. They provided the result for the 2017-2018 year, as with the other departments, at the end of July, in terms of the normal timelines. In terms of the Treasury Circular, departments must submit draft annual reports by 31 August, and then they will normally have a month to refine the stuff, and they must submit it to this legislature by the end of September, which is close of business today. As a Treasury, we've been following up. In fact, we're in constant communication between the departments as well as the legislature, and there's a substantial amount of departments which have already submitted their reports. And in fact, the plan is that by close of business today, all reports should be submitted to the Treasury and also to the legislature. The latest information I got this morning was that everything is on track, and by close of business today, you will probably have most of the stuff ATC. In relation to agriculture, there is an ongoing dispute with the Auditor General in relation to both the 2016-17 matter and the 2017-18 matter, and this is an issue that we have briefly touched on at the last budget committee meeting, and we've asked the committee to engage agriculture when they appear before the relevant standing committee and also before obviously SCOPA on the matter. So as a Treasury, we're convinced, I mean, given the legislation, that an accounting officer must table an annual report whether or not they in agreement or disagreement with the Auditor General. That's our position. We have taken that position up with the department. We've engaged legal services on the matter. Legal services, by virtue of an email, agreed with us on the matter. We've engaged agriculture, and agriculture has agreed to table an annual report, both for 2016-17 as well as 2017-18. They can only table 2016-17 now, given the fact that they only got the annual or the audit outcome on the 31st of May. However, Chair, you will see that there's also a letter that will be written to the Speaker of Parliament with a rider in the annual report that there is currently a disagreement between themselves and the Auditor General. But our view was, notwithstanding that agreement and the fact that there are planned legal proceedings on the matter, that the department should, notwithstanding that, table an annual report. It's then up to this legislature to decide how to deal with this matter. So I thought, let me just clarify the issue, because otherwise I think we can spend lots of time, you know, on something where it's already been clarified. So the Department of Agriculture has written to the Treasury, and we understand that a similar letter has been submitted to the legislature. So it will at least clear that matter, and as I've indicated, it's really then up to the legislature to decide how to deal with the with your own oversight responsibility in relation to the annual reports, and then obviously the Standing Committee on Public Accounts' oversight responsibility in relation to the financial management matters, as well as in relation to the audit outcome on both those reports. So that's the current status of the issue.
Thank you, thank you. Our Member Kondlo and Member Sharon.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the update from the colleague in the provincial trade in particular. Interesting development at this point. It's an interesting development. Let me ask my question, Chair. Because I was worried about this concept that the Standing Committee on the matter of the non-taking must determine, you know, valid reasons. Because then my question was going to be, what is the validity test? You know, what measures? How do we arrive at a reason to say this one is valid or non-valid? Because I think the premise we are all moving from is the constitutional obligation and the mandate that a department has in as far as our governance framework is concerned. So I'm actually covered by the response at this time, you know, of what the provincial treasurer, because that's what, in my view, is supposed to have happened long time ago. Because this becomes a very peculiar situation, which I would have asked national treasurer to then provide us. If there's any precedent so that, or practice, so that we can make reference from, in terms of how do we deal with this particular situation. Because irrespective, and I agree with provincial treasurer, irrespective of the standoff on the specific matter between the department and the AG, the reality of the matter by implication is that what that situation has done, it has curtailed the role of this particular parliament. And I want to get into that. It therefore makes a mockery, you know, of the concept of separation of powers. Because what's the point if then, as the legislature, we find ourselves unable to do our job as defined in the Constitution by the executive on the basis of a standoff between themselves on a matter of interpretation? Because that's the situation, that's the issue that we must actually harmonize between that particular situation of the department and the role and the function of Parliament as determined by the Constitution. Because for me, and if I'm incorrect, you would both clarify me. For me, in the absence, because one of the issues that actually I picked up in one of the Treasury guidelines around this particular matter is timely tabling. Now, when you refer to timely tabling, and it's unfortunate because I want an instrument. When you talk about the Section 65(2)(a) of the PFMA, that provides, you know, some kind of guidance of what happens in terms of the process of tabling and that of non-tabling. The unfortunate thing, it doesn't make provision for this kind of a situation, because obviously it can't be a perpetual non-tabling. So I'm interested in that particular instrument, because we need to have, given this particular standoff, we need to have some kind of an instrument, because once again, my issue is, if this happens, in hindsight, all it does, it curtails the role of this particular parliament in this regard. And actually, perhaps, what recourse does parliament have in that regard when there is such non-compliance? Let me move from that point, but I must say, and I'm hoping you may just give an opinion on the matter, but I must say, I'm actually covered by what the provincial treasury is saying, because this is a serious treasury matter, because it's about how we manage and we account on the financial resources of the state. To move from that issue, Chair, on slide 27, if we can go on slide 27, the last sentence for me, I would like to understand what it means. There's something highlighted there. It says, it is not about opposition parties exercising oversight over government, of government. What does that mean? What message is being driven home, so that at least you make it simpler for a lay person like myself to understand exactly what it means? Because if you mean opposition in the mechanical sense, I'm not sure whether it means that opposition, that is those that are not, that is not the government party, and you must then tell me why. Because opposition in a multi-party democracy like South Africa is, obviously opposition parties will play that particular role. So I'm not sure what this particular sentence means, if you can explain it to me. And then on slide 36, Chair, on slide 36 about, I think that one is more about performance now. On slide 36 and bullet number 3, and slide 37, also bullet number 3, it talks about performance targets. And maybe here I just need some assistance and empowerment. One of the observations, when you talk about targets that are increasing with increases in funding, but also in the slide 37, you talk about do the performance targets drive continuous improvement. This is one question that has actually preoccupied myself in the standing committees that I sit in. One of the observations is that how do you deal with departments that actually from their yearly target achieved in the future, that is now in the next financial year, when they set targets, they actually set targets below the achievement. I'm making sense. Because my understanding of performance or the performance framework that is utilized by the state is that it looks at cumulative assessment. If you had achieved 10 the previous year, it means that actually is your baseline. So when you set a target, you set based on that particular baseline, because that baseline actually indicates your capacity and your capability to achieve. So for me, this has been one issue that I've been asking in most of the departments that are in the standing committees that I sit in, because I've been observing, and for me it is mischief until proven otherwise, that you would actually go under your baseline without clear explanation. Because the reality is, if you were able, according to your baseline, to achieve such a performance, there is no way you can then set a lower target. Because indeed, you are going to overperform, actually. And for me, I can deduce that actually that is one way of preempting or setting up your bonuses. Because if you were able to achieve such baseline and you actually under a target the next financial year, chances of you achieving that and actually achieving even more are very high, and actually setting yourself up for a performance bonus. So can you clarify me on that particular issue? Because this I want to utilize as we go into the assessment and performance target of the annual report that we're gonna be checking. And my last one, Chair, without being long, my last one is on evaluating efficiency. And I see you mentioned HR, human resources, as one. I want to understand transformation targets, because remember, we've got a particular context in South Africa, and one of the national objectives is that of transformation, given the disparities, given the redress, which is also a constitutional obligation in this country of South Africa, and each and every province has got to contribute in that. So how do you, as part of the performance, how do you then assess the transformation performance of the department? Thank you.
Thank you, Member Sharon.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered by Member Ntandlu around the targets, because that was also my concern. I can recall last year, when the National Territory was here, they said to us we must look out for the targets that is set by departments, and then they over go achieve their targets, but the next year they put the baseline exactly the same. So we have the same concern, and covered by that question. My concern also that I linked your 10 with your 36 page fragment, because then the senior management, when they get performance bonuses, they can work on those targets that I overperform, and this is how the increase in the performances.
Member Bivenbal has outstanding or follow up. Member Schaefer wants to ask, and then we come back to Mr.
My question is to Treasury. I fully agree with what Mr. Manila said when he says that the departments should submit their reports regardless of their differences with the agency. Because, and I raised that I think on page 36, slide 26, that which is actually the basis of, no, it's not the basis, it's the result of them not doing it, is that we cannot fulfill our constitutional obligation. They deprived us of doing that. That's the point I was making on that slide. Now, my question then is, did you give this directive to only agriculture for not submitting that, regardless of your difference, you should be submitting the report,
Or is this a directive that was given across the board in case something like that happens in the future and some department has a, you know, has a dispute with the Auditor General around something that they don't agree with, and then they withhold their report and something like this happens again? So did you give it to everyone or only to them? And then just a similar question as was asked before, but I just want to ask it from a different angle to you, sir, National Treasurer Senior. Remember I referred to slide 27 and then I said the committee needs to work as a team in exercising oversight. Now my colleague asks you to explain the oversight process is about the legislature exercising oversight, not the opposition. That is exactly the point I was trying to make, but also now if you answer, tell me whether I'm understanding correctly. When you say the legislature, it means everybody except the cabinet that sits in front here. So that means chairpersons and everyone is supposed to exercise oversight. That is what I understand by what you're saying.
Thank you, Member Shaker, and then Member Simmons, and then we'll hand over to National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. So if I can just get some clarity, we are going to receive the Agricultural AG report, or that we'll get both reports, but that we won't discuss some of the stuff in the document that relates to the court case. So there's some that is sub judice, if I can understand that, and we will get that on time.
Thank you, Member Summers, Member Summers, and then we can have a word.
No, thank you, Chair. Just the National Treasury, because the National Treasury covered my other question. I would just like to know, in your National Treasury guidelines for legislative oversight, your definition of public participation, because obviously earlier we had a bit of a difference in opinion and how we see it, but from your perspective, when you come and you evaluate and so forth, everything's happening according to your guidelines, how do you see public participation at the National Treasury itself? Is it a meeting here? Is the way other people interpret it? Because sometimes I think we tend to get hooked on how we interpret things, whereas we have guidelines that determine how you see it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Nair, and the Group of Population.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Member asked about a validity test as to what we would consider being appropriate for the non-tabling of an annual report, and that's any previous trend that we have noticed in this regard. I must admit I've been involved in this process for about 16, 17 years, and the reasons that are normally provided for the non-tabling of an annual report is mostly the audit not being finalized, or sometimes there's, like in the case of SAA, the report was being wasn't finalized for purposes of where he was considered not being a going concern kind of thing, pending the guarantee. So it was mainly around those type of things. But in my experience, it's the first time where a report has not been tabled because it's the litigation process. So as I said, I've been involved in this process over 16, 17 years about tabling reports to cabinet on the annual reports, tabling of annual reports and the audit outcomes of TFMA compliant institutions, both at national and provincial level. So I'm not in a position to give you any trend in the past, other than the audit not being finalized. So this is the only case. And you ask as to what is the role of the legislature and what recourse does the legislature have for the non-tabling. I think that will be covered in your rules of the provincial legislature. At national parliament they have the rules of the committees. Committee rule, basically. So that would probably be covered in your rules of your provincial legislature. And you spoke about slide 27 and 36. If I can just go to those slides. 27. Here you mentioned about the oversight process about the legislature exercising oversight of the executive in accordance with the constitution, not about the opposition parties exercising oversight of the government. And another one member answered it quite nicely and said that it's about the legislature exercising oversight of the executive. So the legislature excluding the executive, so to speak. I mean, it's about the, I mean, committees are a multi-party. So it's not about the committees holding government to account. It's about holding the executive who they are exercising oversight over. So it's a multi-party. I mean, committees are normally established as multi-party committees. So it's, therefore they should act in unison in exercising oversight over the executive, irrespective of which party that the executive comes from. Then you also mentioned about the, in some cases, two members I think mentioned about the baselines being set up, the targets being set up in a manner such that they overachieve and then it invalidates or makes a bonus look as if it is worthy of award. And I think that you see, during the budget process, I mean, the provincial treasury, the national treasury go through a rigorous process in the allocation of budgets. So that would be, seen to at that particular point. They would look at the targets in relation to the amount that is going to be appropriated for that department. So that, the process there, so it's very unlikely that will happen. But then it also, the legislature also, the committees now in this case, also need to play a role in interrogating that type of information. That is also a method of holding the executive to account. So you find that budgets do increase year on year. And in some cases, in all cases, budgets increase due to inflation issues. But then if there is a substantial increase in the budget for the building of houses, and that increase is, there's no correlation between that increase and the number of houses that are being built. And it's very unlikely that would happen. It would pass through the provincial treasury because, and especially the investigative treasury, they have a very rigorous budgeting process here, and even the national level as well. So it's very unlikely that would happen. But if it does happen, then I think the committees could ask the very, very difficult questions as to why that has taken place. And obviously those things are, and then you're going to hold the relevant ABC to account for that. So, and he really needs to provide worthy reasons for not being for the budget, for services not taking place in accordance with the budget. And then you also mentioned page 37, 36 and 37. You mentioned that HD's performance targets changed over time, and I covered that in my earlier response, and also do the performance targets drive continuous improvement. I think that is also related in the sense that is the budget and the performance targets, is there a correlation between that? And if not, then obviously the difficult questions need to be asked. And then would you like to, if I could just use the human settlements argument once again. Does the budget that's allocated to the department, is it really contributing to the reduction in the housing backlog? So that particular politics deals with that, that type of issue. And then you also asked about evaluating efficiency in terms of transformation targets. How is this assessed? I mean, there's the Employment Equity Act and there's other legislation that drives the performance targets and transformation targets, and each department would have the equity plan, and so I think you need to assess the transformation targets in the non-financial information part of the annual report. They would disclose that type of information, and you need to look at that in relation to the department's transformation targets. So that is how that is assessed. And Okay, the other member just made a comment, and then he said, one member indicated in the guideline, how do we see public participation? Public participation, you could, as the chairperson indicated, there's an advertisement that they sent out inviting members of the public to participate. They normally come and sit in the gallery, and then there could be an opportunity for them to participate in the discussion. So that is how I see public participation. Or, I mean, you could take the committee to communities as well. I mean, that's another form of public participation, as I think it takes place in the municipalities. So that is another, in my view, how it could be done. And I just hope I've covered all the questions. If not, please tell me and I'll get back to that.
And Devika, the follow-up?
I'm going to assume that the civil doesn't know the background to my comment around public participation, and I'm going to use you as an example, just as an example, Chair. Let's say I say to you, Chairperson, we are spending an inordinate amount of money on public participation. We send people to travel, we must eat, we must have accommodation, we must transport, we fly, whatever. We get there, nobody attends. That means that was a futile exercise. Participation did not happen. We advertised, we went through the tick boxes that we're going to do public participation. But public participation in its real sense did not happen. Then the person, pretending now it's you, then you say to me, but that's a hearing, it's not public participation. So that's why I asked, what's the difference between a hearing and public participation? It's the same thing. You're going to listen to people, and obviously you will respond. A hearing is the same thing, and you said it's semantics. So, I mean, if people in senior positions, I hope you now understand why I asked the question. People in senior positions tell you, a hearing is not public participation. Really? The point I'm also making, Chair, and at Scopa we must look at these things, that the inordinate amount of money that is spent for public outreach, but the outcome is not there. What's the reason? What's not being done to ensure that that outcome happens in the way that we want it to happen?
Thank you.
Chair, maybe just in response to the matter that was raised by member Beaverkop. I mean, we see our role in terms of Section 18 of the PFMA in the main around enforcing the provisions of the PFMA. I mean, agriculture is now the first department, obviously, where there's been that's where the thing is actually rolled over to an extent that's actually followed into the second year. And our advice to the department was based on our interpretation of the PFMA in relation to the accounting or accountability arrangements. I mean, the PFMA is clear in terms of the timelines when you must on table, and then if you are unable to table, then the accounting officer and the executive must provide reasons. And also, if the Auditor General are unable to provide an audit opinion in relation to a department, they must equally also table such a report. And my understanding is that for the 2016-17 year, I mean, you've got the Auditor General here, they have tabled such a report, and also the fact that there's been a dispute on the matter. As soon as the audit report were issued, we said that notwithstanding the fact that there may be differences or disputes, the Auditor General has effectively given an opinion, so there is an opinion, so the department must follow the process. And then our advice was also to say that our interpretation is that they need to table a report and then obviously, you know, allow the legislature to deal with it appropriately. Hence, the point that they've made in the annual report, in fact, is a set of letter to the legislature, I think it will be on page 40, highlighting the fact that they are in dispute still with the Auditor General, but nothing must keep them away from actually, I think, providing a report. That was our advice to them. And in fact, Chair, we would provide similar advice to departments if a matter like that comes up, because as I said, we are guided by our interpretation of the legislation, and we have also tested, you know, on the issue with legal services, and they have also acted on the advice of legal services in terms of the disclaimer, which they have now highlighted in the annual report. So the advice from our office is that by 3 o'clock this afternoon, the department will provide all the information to the legislature. It will be accompanied by a letter, obviously written and signed by the MEC for Finance, who is accountable to the legislature.
Thank you. Follow-up member comment.
Can I just ask, especially on this question, without belaboring the point, now that the directive or the advice from the provincial treasurer to the Department of Agriculture is there to do the tabling. The only question that I have is that given that there is still a dispute around that accounting method between the department, will that recur again on the report that they still need to place? Because for me, if that issue is not resolved, it means once again, even in the current report that they are supposed to be presenting, I mean, the same situation will be there. So are we going to be seeing that issue again on this report being made or placed on the side in terms of reporting? If I think you get what my question is. I think that's just one issue I wanted to get clarity on, because when they present, you know, because remember the issue was accounting, I think, on Cathedral. So will that be the same thing, or it will then Cathedral's report will then be put on the side because there is a dispute around that accounting method?
Member, I also wanted to follow up.
Chair, linked up to the question I asked National Treasury earlier on, where I said, I took the issue of non-tabling, non-opinion, and a disclaimer then. What I hear then, that 1617 will be a disclaimer. The question would be then is, we are a year late now, where do we stand with the 1718 one? And I think that's the important one. So you say you did force them to, or guided them to submit, whether they're going to get whatever. I believe that also happened with the Department of Environmental Affairs. Did they concede to submit? We haven't received that report yet, and it might still happen up to 3 o'clock. And why I'm saying that is because it was ATC. And in the light of that, I'm saying that the Department of Environmental Affairs and Development Planning was in the same, let's call it, dispute with the Auditor General, maybe for a different reason, but I mean the outcome is exactly the same. Then, Chairperson, I just would like to get clarity, maybe I missed that point, when Member Schaefer asked the question, now there's still a dispute, will the full report be submitted to the legislator? And I can't recall that you responded to that, because if the full report's not submitted to the legislator, to Parliament, I mean, it's no use to engage with a report that some issues has been blanked out or sub judice, as was mentioned, and I would just would like to get the clarity on that one. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, I'd just like to clarify myself so that there's no confusion. The matter of environmental affairs is dealt with. The matter came up at the last budget committee meeting, but that was before the EXA actually issued their final report on the audit outcome of environment. So I haven't checked the latest records on whether environment is stable, but I understand the report is with Jasmine, but the matter has been dealt with. The issue with agriculture is both in relation to 2016-17 and 17-18. Both those reports will be tabled today. And as I've indicated earlier on, they could only table their 2016-17 audit report because the audit outcome or the Auditor General's report on the financial statements only came up on 31 May 2018. So they effectively had about 2 months or so to prepare the annual report for 2016-17. Maybe also just for the record, I mean, we didn't force them to table, but
I mean, our we've provided them with guidance on our interpretation of the legislation. We've also taken guidance from legal services, obviously, because we've taken up the matter, because we've got a particular interpretation, and the outcome of that was, in essence, you know, the guidance that they must table, and that is why the decision has been tabled, has been taken for them to table. But they will table it, as I've indicated, with a letter, because there is a condition in the annual report, and I can get the page, I think it's on page 40, whatever, but a letter will accompany both annual reports. So that means for 2016-17 and 2017-18, and our understanding is that it will be the full report, which will include all, I think there are five sections, all sections of the report, but the dispute is on the report of the auditor, Auditor General. And in both years, they've been qualified. Obviously, 16-17, they've been qualified, and the Auditor General came to the same conclusion, given that the issue at hand has not been sorted out. And maybe also just for the committee to note that the matter doesn't relate to the audit outcome of Cassidra per se as an institution, but it relates to the Department of Agriculture and how they treated certain transactions in their books. So that is where the matter will actually come up. So that's the position as we stand at the moment.
Thank you very much for the response. Just on public participation, Member Beaverville, I share the concern if there's public hearings or meetings and there's no people. But even if there's sometimes one organization like the National Angry, they represent thousands of people. But I can assure you, I think for this year, the records will all be broken of public participation from this parliament, because this place here was too small on a few occasions in many other halls in this province. And the records tell us to show that. Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your presence and coming. Members, we're going to take a 10-minute break and then we can do and over to the Minister of Pleasure.
Can I make a proposal? Other than coming back, and I mean, we have prepared a presentation, but in essence, it's the same. I mean, we've done it last year also, so the committee can choose to take the presentation for record. And I think the only real thing is the fact that we have a CSC, okay, which sits in the Department of Agriculture that provides corporate services. They are here for all the departments except education and health, but the accountability sits with accounting officers. So the CSC will just support them from an HR perspective in the main. And other than that, the presentation, I think the background, the legislative stuff is more or less the same, unless there's anything that you want to say from your side. And then, I mean, if you check that.
Just a moment, thank you. We'll deal with this now. Just
for the members to note that the presentation prepared by Provincial Treasury is a pretty slight presentation. The content of the presentation is really about what the members can expect in each section of the annual report. And there's also assurance provided by the different bodies that serve the department. So Section C, it's the governance side that will tell you that the audit committee has actually looked at the risk management, at the fraud and corruption of the department. It gives you assurance that the audit committee has looked at what was submitted in the annual report. Section D is an indication of what the CSC has worked with the national DPSA in terms of the minimum requirements that's required in an annual report. So the committee members has the assurance that the structure and the content of the annual report has already been visited by either the Provincial Treasury or the CSC. And then lastly, in the financial statements, what we try to demonstrate to the members is that the financial statements is a very technical document that requires technical interpretation. And the Auditor General's report gives you assurance that they've looked at the requirements of the annual financial statements. It's been audited in terms of those requirements, so they give assurance that the financial statements has been prepared in accordance to the basis that National Treasury wants you to look at it. There are technical terms that is in the guidelines of National Treasury, and I mean that will come up in any of the hearings that you have with the specific departments in terms of how they've recognized irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful. So I don't think that the presentation, it will add to your understanding if this is the first time that you've gone through an annual report, but my understanding is that the committee members have gone through annual reports before. It's just, it's a takeaway document that summarizes many of the guidelines that has been issued directly to the department.
Thank you, sir. We will take that guidance as submitted and brief. Members are satisfied. Thank you very much for that then. And then conclude their part of the presentation on the state provincial treasury and national treasury as well. Thank you very much for coming. Members, we just need to deal then with one item before we close. We would like just the officials to be excused. You are excused. Thank you very much. And then we might just deal 2 minutes on one item and then we can close it and then have tea and coffee. Yeah, they'd love to pay you as well. Week, but there's already public hearing, so that the best possible date is for us to sacrifice Monday the 8th, because the annual report starts the 9th, so we have to do it by the 8th. So, and the morning there's already a committee meeting, and then the afternoon, maybe 2 o'clock, I'm not sure, is it 2 hours? 1.5 hours, maybe? 1.5 hours, AG? More or less 1.5 hours on the 8th. We need to agree on this because we will have to inform the chief whip and it must become a part of the official business of Parliament and a program. 2 o'clock, because the morning already there's a committee on the 8th. Member Schaefer, your committee is still going on the 8th, the morning, yeah. So it means the budget committee will meet at 2 then, for hour and a half or 2 hours. Members, is that... that agreed, we just have to plan to work in the weekend and in the constituency prior to that date. We appreciate your cooperation. Member Christian?
Chairperson, we must just check when education is sitting that morning and then we can have it after that because then we, you know, we for education already, I think it's 10 till what is it? You also have a meeting.
You mean the Monday, the 8th?
The 8th.
There's one meeting on the program left, Member Schaefer. The 8th is the constituency day, but on that day Member Schaefer has got a committee meeting the morning, so we propose the 8th, the afternoon 2 o'clock, for hour and a half or 2. Is that fine? Thank you for that, members, and then before we, just an announcement, Cluster A will meet now after this meeting, Cluster A must just stay behind for the meeting. Thank you very much for coming. Member must
join. Another announcement, the members...
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
All right, thank you. Members of the local government standing committee must immediately meet here.
Now, yeah.
After this year.
All right. Sorry. Cluster A is going to committee room 2 then. Cluster A goes to committee room 2. Thank you. And member must only meet here. That's right. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.
Yes, please. And then, of course.